Hey, this is Steve, and this podcast is all about making the gospel relevant to your life. That means discovering the good news of Jesus in whatever you're going through today. As soon as Jesus gives the blind man his sight, Jesus claims to be the good shepherd. But he tells the religious people that they're blind to something about this, and that blindness keeps them guilty. What is it that we need to be able to see to keep us from being guilty? Okay, so I've got a confession to make. Apparently I can't see anything. I don't know if any men in the room have this issue who are married, but apparently I need my wife to be able to see things. Not everything, just certain things, apparently. So it's the middle of the night, you know, and I'm starving, and there's something in particular in the refrigerator that I want. It's something I know we have, and I've been looking forward to eating, and I'm going to eat it. So I go to the refrigerator, open the door, and I look all around on all the shelves, and it is not there. I look in the door, you know, not there. So it's just, we don't, whatever it was, I thought we had it. I know we had it. It's not there anymore. So I close the door, look in the freezer. It's not there either. I look in the cabinets, not in the cabinets. I'm looking all over the place. And the thing, the one thing I'm looking for is just nowhere to be found, right? And so I'm banging around, rummaging around in the kitchen, trying to find that one thing that I was going to eat that I was saving for myself, you know. And she comes in a little later, and she knows what I'm up to, because I'm not going to talk to her about it, right? I'm not going to go to her. I can find it. She comes in and she shakes her head. She says, come here. And she takes me to the refrigerator, opens the door. And I'm like, it's just not there. And she goes, watch this. And she reaches in and she grabs the, you know, jar of jelly or whatever it is, and she moves it out of the way, and there it is. It was there the whole time, but I was blinded to it, because that one thing, I'm like, she's like, you can't see anything. You're blind. All you gotta do is move the one thing, you know, that one thing blinded me. Does anybody else have this disease? Am I the only one? Chase has it too. Okay, a few of us have that. It drives her crazy. That's why I love it. It drives her crazy that I can't see that one thing behind whatever else. I'm blind to it. Right? Sometimes we just get blinded to things that are really obvious and there, but we just can't see it. Last week, we talked about this story in John 9 where Jesus heals this blind man, this man that was born blind. And last week, as we were talking about it, you know, he's there and he's talking and he's saying to the man, to the crowd, to the Pharisees, the religious people, he says, I am here so that I can give sight to the blind and show those. He says, I'm here to show those who think they can see that they really can't see. So he's saying that you've got it too. And I'm here to show you've got it too. You're blind to something right in front of you that you can't see. And the religious leaders, man, they knew he was talking about them. The religious people, the church people are the ones he was talking about. And they respond to him. They're saying, are you saying that we're blind? We, the religious people, are you saying that we're blind? And Jesus responds in John 9:41. He says, if you were just blind, you wouldn't be guilty. But he says, you remain guilty because you claim you can see. You remain guilty because you claim you can see. Now he's talking here to religious people. Could he be talking to us? Could he actually be talking to us? Because I know we like to say we're not religious, we love Jesus, you know, we're not religious, we're in a relationship. But dude, if you're an American and if you are in a church service on a Sunday morning in a church building, you're participating in a religious activity. Could he be talking to us? Do we think we see, but really we don't see? Are we trying to send a message? I can see, I don't need you showing me, but maybe we are really blind. And we think we're something we're not. We think we can see when we can't. Could Jesus really be talking to us? What am I blind to? In fact, this is the first blank on your page. What am I blind to that keeps me guilty? Is it possible that I think I've got it all figured out, but really I'm just guilty? Because in reality, I'm blind. What is it that I'm blind to? Okay, so before I can really get to the answer of this question, you gotta give me a couple of minutes to set it up, okay? So I'm gonna get to the answer. This is a very important question. We all ought to be able to drill down and get to the bottom of this question in our own lives, but before I get there, it's just gonna take me a minute to set up. Can you be patient with me for just a minute while I set it up? Okay, thanks. One person can be patient. The rest of us gotta go. All right. So here's Jesus, and the healing of the blind guy has just happened. We looked at it last week. And Jesus begins to talk in this metaphor of sheep in a sheepfold. And he's describing the sheep in the sheepfold, right? He starts talking in these terms. And we looked at it last week. He describes himself in this metaphor as the door. I am the door for the sheep. They come in and will be saved, and they go in and out and they find pasture, abundant life. He's connecting this idea of himself, the door to abundant life and salvation, right? So that's kind of a big deal. But in this exact same metaphor, at the same time, Jesus claims the position not only of the door, but he claims another position in the metaphor also. He's not only the door, but we see right here in John 10, 10, and 11, Jesus says, my purpose is to give them the sheep in my sheepfold. We hope that's us, right? We hope he's talking about us. My purpose is to give us here a rich and satisfying life. And then he says the big I am statement here, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd sacrifices his life for the sheep. So in this one metaphor, Jesus claims doorness. He is the door for the sheep, and he is also the shepherd for the sheep. He's both. He claims both as he's describing the same thing. Now, how many shepherds do you know? That's what I thought. Zero. We don't know any shepherds, okay? Because we don't have a lot of sheep here in Gilmer County. Most of us came from a place where there aren't sheep, there aren't shepherds, there's traffic, right? There's problems. We came to get away from all of that, maybe get a little closer to where there might be sheep, but there's no sheep here. We don't have sheep. We don't know what shepherds are. So we know what we think we know, you know, about shepherds. They watched their flocks by night. The angels came and sang to them, right? And, you know, shepherds, they stand around watching sheep. And they probably have a big, you know, stick with a hook in it, because that's what all shepherds have to have. That's like the entry requirement. Oh, you're applying for the job, shepherd. Do you have a staff with a hook? Okay, maybe we can talk, right? So we know a little bit about shepherds, but not much. So when Jesus says, I'm the good shepherd, you know, that calls to mind for us things that we think that we know about shepherds. But when Jesus said this to those people, now they knew sheep and they knew shepherds. Not only did they know sheep and shepherds, but for these people, Jesus is talking here to 100% ethnic Jewish people. These are people who are well acquainted with the Old Testament promises, prophecies about the coming Messiah. And so there's these promises that there will be a Messiah who will come and he will lead his people. He will be a military leader, right? He will overthrow the oppressive government, but also there are these prophecies that he will come and not just lead his people militarily, but will lead them by getting his arms around them and loving them and shepherding them. And the Old Testament's full of prophecies of the Messiah being like a shepherd to his people. And so when Jesus says this, I am the good shepherd, he's identifying himself with something much more than just the guy out there in the dust with the hook, staff, and everything. Isaiah 40, 11 is one of these prophecies. He, the Messiah, will feed his flock like a shepherd. He will carry the lambs in his arms, holding them close to his heart. Yeah, that's who Jesus is saying, I am. I am this good shepherd, the shepherd that was promised to lead you by carrying you in my arms. Micah 5 says that he will stand to lead his flock of sheep with the Lord's strength in the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. Then his people will live in the land undisturbed, for he will be highly honored around the world, and he will be the source of peace. Jesus is saying, I am that. I am that good shepherd. So these people are hearing this description that Jesus makes of himself, and they're ringing in their ears and their hearts, this may be the one. He is claiming something huge here, something that we've been looking forward to all of our lives. All of our culture is built around this idea that this good shepherd will come and will lovingly, compassionately lead us. And he'll be our king, and we'll serve him. So he describes himself as this good shepherd. Not only that, but he articulates what the good shepherd does in this same passage. In verses 4 and 5, Jesus says, when he, that's the shepherd, has brought out all of his own from the sheep pen, he goes before them and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. So the good shepherd, I love this, leads his sheep. The shepherd goes before the sheep, right? He doesn't tell the sheep, hey, that path down there, you go that way. There's a dark, scary one there. You go that way. That one, I'm not sure where it heads, but you head that way. He doesn't send us off in directions where he doesn't go first. He leads us. We follow in his footsteps because he's the good shepherd. Hebrews says that we have a great high priest who has gone through everything we go through, who understands our temptations. He leads us this way. In John 10, 16, right here in the same passage, 14 and 15, Jesus says again, I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father, look at this, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay my life down for the sheep. He's saying that he is the good shepherd, and I can't imagine a more intimate relationship than that of God the Father and God the Son. Just as my Father knows me and I know the Father. The Father and the Son are two-thirds of the Trinity. God, three in one. This is not even like a father-son relationship like I have with my boy who got married yesterday. This is a father and a son who are literally one. And just as I know the Father and the Father knows me, I know my sheep and I lay my life down for them. He's painting this intimate picture. It's not just some general sense of I'm laying my life down for the sheep and, you know, I hope they're all okay. He knows you. He's with you. He's here to lead you. He's all about taking care of you. He loves you. He's your shepherd. So he lays his life down for us. He cares for us. He's self-sacrificing. In verse 16, he also says this, I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there'll be one flock, one shepherd. I love this because, again, he's talking to ethnic Jewish people here, right? They're all Jewish. They are the called, chosen ones of God, the promised ones of God. They are his special flock. In the Old Testament, they're called his little flock, right? And so he's now saying that I've got sheep outside this flock. I've got sheep who are not Jewish. I gotta believe that when Jesus is talking about his sheep that he knows intimately here, he's gotta have you and me in mind as he says this. He is the good shepherd. So he is this picture of this perfect shepherd leading his sheep, but there's a giant problem, okay? Big problem, and it's the next blank on your page. As good of a shepherd as he is, truth is, nobody wants to be a sheep, right? Nobody wants to be a sheep. Who wants to be a sheep, right? I don't want to be a sheep, and I know you don't want to be a sheep. Why? Because, you know, sheep are dumb. Let's just confess right now, sheep are dumb, right? I mean, you can put sheep in a big giant pasture with a dirt road right down the middle. You can put all of them on one side of the road in the pasture, and they will graze and eat all that grass until they consume it all. But the sheep, once they consume all that grass and that half of the pasture, they will starve and die because they're not smart enough to walk across the dirt to the other grass 6 or 8 or 10 feet away. They're that dumb. Sheep are dumb, and they're not very good at even being sheep. Sheep are useless, right? I mean, what do? They don't bark when a stranger comes around. You know, they don't pull your cart. They don't really do anything for you. They're just good for, you know, their meat and their wool. That's about it. They're kind of useless, don't do much. And lastly, sheep are herd animals. Right? Because they're dumb and they're useless, so they got to be kind of pushed around. You got to tell the sheep where to go and what to do, right? And so all the sheep just kind of sheep around. You know, they just herd around and they just follow the leader and they don't know where to go. So you tell them that way, they just kind of lean that way, you know, and they get herded around because they're dumb and sheep can't think for themselves. Nobody wants to be a sheep. Nobody wants to be sheep-ish, right? We don't see ourselves as sheep. Let's just be honest. Nobody here sees yourself as a sheep, and you would never want to be seen as a sheep because we all want to be wolves, right? We want to be wolves. Wolves are not like sheep at all, right? Wolves are not herd animals. They're pack animals, which means that they don't go where everybody tells them to go. They're all about their family, their little group, right? And they take care of their own. They make sure they protect and provide for their family, and they're kind of nomadic. They go where they want to go. Wolves are typically apex predators. That means in their range, they are typically the top of the food chain. All right, so they are the number one predators. They pursue what they want and they take what they want. That's what wolves do. Nobody bosses the wolf around. The wolf does what the wolf wants to do, whatever they want. We want to be wolves. We see ourselves as wolves. We're not sheepish, we're wolfish. We hunt, we pursue, and we do what we want. We never, ever, ever want to be sheep. We want to be wolves. But here's the reality. The shepherd kills the wolf. You hear me? The shepherd has absolutely no tolerance for the wolf. Think about it. The shepherd gets his sheep all in the pen, and it's nighttime, they're about to bed down, and the wolf shows up. Does the shepherd say, "Oh, come on in here, you can cuddle with me tonight, wolf. I'll just little rub your little hairs on your chin while we all sleep together"? Is that what's going to happen? No, the shepherd and the wolf are enemies. And the shepherd's job is to guard the sheep by killing the wolf. So here we all see ourselves as wolves, but the shepherd is the enemy of the wolf. This is the reality of our lives. We were all born wolves, seeking after what we want, doing what we want to do, charting our own course, deciding what's best for me. And the Bible calls that sin. And my sin makes me an enemy of God. Not just kind of on the outs with God, not just kind of, you know, on off relationship with God. My sin makes me the enemy of God. And the shepherd's job is to kill the wolf. The way the New Testament says that is the wages of sin is death, right? And it also says that all of us have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. All of us are wolf-ish, and we are against God and his kingdom, and we must be punished. We must be stopped. And so all of us deserve the death penalty. All of us deserve to be killed by the shepherd. But here's the thing. God loved us so much that he sent his shepherd. And instead of killing the wolf, the shepherd chose to die for the wolf, to die in the place of the wolf, to take the place of the wolf and die so that we could be changed, so that we could become sheep. So the shepherd goes to the cross, all of my sin, all of my crime, all of my wolfishness taken and placed onto Jesus, and he was killed for me, and he rose again as the eternal great shepherd, and he says, please come into my fold. Step into a relationship with God through me. I'm the door, and I will lead you. I'm the shepherd. That's what Jesus does for us. That's the relationship there. And so this being the truth is the next blank on your page. You can never know the shepherd unless you become a sheep. Can't know the shepherd if you're a wolf. You can only become a sheep to know the shepherd. You can never know the shepherd unless you become a sheep. So all this is set up to answer the question, what is it that blinds me? What is it I need to be able to see to be able to really know the truth and to be saved? What am I blind to? Let's look at what Jesus says again in John 9:41. He says, if you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty, but you remain guilty because you claim you can see. Okay, so here's the truth. We like to think that we're, you know, sheep. We like to claim that we're sheep, but what we really see ourselves as is wolves. We really think that we're wolves. So we think we've got it figured out. We think we know how to live our lives. We think we know the truth, you know. We think we know best. We don't trust the shepherd. We trust ourselves. So we think we can see, and we think we're wolves. And here all along, here's what we're blind to, all along while we really think of ourselves more as wolves, the truth is we're not wolves, we're just goats. Goats. Yeah, we're neither sheep nor wolf, we're goats. How do I know this? Because think about it. On Judgment Day, we'll all stand before God and there will be no wolves, only sheep and goats. You're only one or the other, sheep or goat. Goats are different than wolves and sheep. Goats are different because goats are stubborn, right? I mean, have you ever got to play around with a goat? They're kind of mean little nasty creatures sometimes. Oh, they're cute and sweet and they make those sweet little sounds when they're babies, but they grow up and they get stubborn, man. And you want the goat to go over here and eat and he doesn't want to, he is not going to. And you can grab him by the horns and pull him, you can push him, he's gonna dig in and he's gonna resist. He's gonna be stubborn and not go where he's supposed to go, not do what he's supposed to do just to prove that he's right. He's gonna stand there and dig in his hooves and not submit to the shepherd. That's what a goat is gonna do. We think we're charting our own course. We think that we're choosing what's right and what's best for us, but really we're just being goats. We're just being stubborn. We're just trying to get our own way. We're making a mess of our lives. Jesus will stand as we will stand in Judgment Day, and there will be sheep and there will be goats. He'll separate the two, right? And there won't be any wolves. You know why there's no wolves at Judgment Day? Because the wolf has long been dealt with at that point. That battle is over at that point. And so we stand before him as either sheep or goats. And the goats he sends away, but the sheep he brings in to his eternal fold. And how does he know? How does he know? How do you and I know? Because we're blind. We think we're wolves. How do we know if we're either really sheep or really just goats? How do we know? Jesus identifies really clearly in Matthew 25, in that scene on Judgment Day, here's how he knows. He says, for I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me into your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. What he's saying is, you know, you were a goat, and I wanted you to become a sheep. And so I began to change things in your life, and you sheep, you let me. When I began to speak into your life and I began to change you and transform you into my image, you said yes. You didn't say no. You went where I wanted you to go. You did what I wanted you to do. You became who I wanted you to become. You didn't dig in your heels. You didn't fight. You didn't argue. You didn't try to get your own way and be stubborn. You did what I called you to do. You became who I called you to become. Next blank on your page is this: the difference between sheep and goat is submission to the shepherd. The difference between sheep and goat is simply submission to the shepherd. He's saying, I want to transform you into my image. I want to live through you. And if I successfully live through you, then that's how I can identify that you were in fact a sheep, not a goat. When you look at your life, how's that working out? I mean, how many times do we know what God's word says about our time, our relationships? We know what God says about our sex life. We know what God says about our money. You know, we know what God says about how we're to conduct ourselves in front of other people who aren't Christians. We know what God says about who we are as sheep, but we choose to goat it up, right? We choose to just dig our little hooves in and say, no, it's going to be my way, not your way. The difference between a sheep and a goat is submission to the shepherd. In Luke 9, Jesus says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. He's saying, follow me. Go where I go. Be what I'm all about. Do what I do. Why would you want to do anything else? Why would you want to turn any other direction, goat? Why do you want to dig in and baa back at him and complain about your circumstances or your spouse or your job or your money? Why would you do anything besides be submissive to the shepherd? Jesus says, I came that they might have life and have it abundantly. His promise for you in following him, in being the sheep, is that he will give you life. Everything else just leads to death. Why would you choose anything else? He calls you out into those wide green pastures to graze to your heart's content. But we dig our heels in, inside the pen, and we say, no, I'm going to do what I want, not what you want. Why? So I want to lead us in a simple prayer, all of us. And I want this prayer to be verbal. I want us to pray this prayer out loud together. It's a prayer you're very familiar with. It's found in Psalm 23. If you've ever been to a funeral, you've probably heard this psalm there. I don't know why we reserve this prayer for funerals, except that those are usually some of the darkest times of our lives. But this prayer ought to be one that we pray all the time. It's a prayer about letting God truly be our shepherd. So we're going to put it up on the screen. I'd just like for us to read this together. I don't want to just kind of breeze through it either. I want to read it and consume it and let these words just kind of roll around in your head and in your heart as we say this together. Let's all repeat this together. The Lord is my shepherd. I have all that I need. He lets me rest in green meadows. He leads me beside peaceful streams. He renews my strength. He guides me along right paths, bringing honor to his name. Even when I walk through the darkest valley, I will not be afraid, for you are close beside me. Your rod and your staff protect and comfort me. You prepare a feast for me in the presence of my enemies. You honor me by anointing my head with oil. My cup overflows with blessings. Surely your goodness and unfailing love will pursue me all the days of my life, and I will live in the house of the Lord forever. Last blank on your page is this: where is the shepherd calling me? Where is the shepherd calling me? What is it, goat, that the shepherd is pointing to in your life and say, I came to kill that. I came to get rid of that. And I want you to move, to no longer be stuck in your goat ways, and let's move into sheep ways. Follow me. Where is he calling you in your life? Where in your family? What relationship needs to be repaired? What family member needs to be redeemed? What do you need to stop spending your money on? I heard that laugh. Amen. I got an amen right here. What do you need to stop spending your money on? What do you need to quit investing your time and your energy in? What do you need to quit looking at? Who do you need to stop talking about? Shoot, who do you need to stop hating? Let's be honest, you're not just mad at them, you hate them. Who do you need to stop hating? Where's the shepherd calling you?
Hey, thanks for listening to today's message. I hope it was a blessing to you. To make sure you don't miss out on any of our messages at the Orchard Church, why don't you subscribe to our podcast on iTunes? Just do that and you'll have every message delivered to you automatically on your mobile device as soon as it's published. That way you don't miss anything. Just go to iTunes and search The Orchard Church Podcast and you'll find us right away. Use your podcast app to do that. Life group leader questions are available right now on stevedusek.com. And if you want to know more about The Orchard Church, you can find us at orchardelijay.com. That's orchardelijay.com.